Lock and load.
Nobody knew who the hell he was.
Or have lived in a Muslim-majority country. I know because I am one of them.
How's that hokey-changey stuff working out for you?
He's now our president. He's our president.
If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth.
Taking back America, one listener at a time. This is the Bella D'Angelo Show.
And welcome to Bella D'Angelo Show, from the love of crude oil that is transplanted to minis stupid, as I often call it. We're actually professional, Joel. Can you believe that?
We are so professional that we should both be wearing like suits, and you should be high heels. I should be like wearing a tie or something like that.
No, like the all leather one piece Def Leppard.
Yeah, I could go with that. I could see that. Yeah, that be rocking that, you know. Maybe, as long as there's a Rob Halford from Judas Priest, you know, that kind of get up, kind of professional.
So welcome, Joe Mansheim, or Man Bun, as I called you when we first came on. Thanks for joining. Thanks for playing and trying this out. This has been a long time in the works. I had forwarded you a show from the oil field. You know, back 7 years ago, I was talking about going prime time and getting on XM Sirius Patriot. I've been doing this at least for a little bit. And I tell you what really finally pushed me over the edge. So last week, we were all set up to have Scott Jensen, who's running for governor here, running neck and neck with Timmy, has a huge opportunity to take Timmy out in this election in November. And we're running on its Melon app, and the thing totally crashed on us. Sad thing is, we had a great interview with Scott.
Oh, yeah. It was absolutely outstanding.
And the policies that he's running on and the platform, we're going to have Scott and Matt Burke on the program because he is a force to be reckoned with, and he really has the opportunity to help save Minnesota. I consider Scott somewhat of a friend, and so I was just grateful of his patience with us last week as we were trying to work through. But we're all professional. We have microphones. We got a fun soundboard there. I don't even dare touch it. I don't know what.
Yeah, she's letting me run it. The guy who can barely turn on his cell phone is running the most technological part of this thing. Hey, speaking of who we're going to have on today.
Yes, let's line it up.
We got Cicely Davis, the CD5 candidate that's running against none other than Ilhan the Beast Omar.
I wish, you know, we're going to get to the point where we can play little sound bites and sound clips and things like that, because I had thought about putting some of the more profound statements Ilhan Omar has made in her career.
Oh, my God. I mean, some of them, they border on, like, between the insane and the absurd. And what really blows me away about her is that she will actually look you right dead in the eye and lie to your face. And I think she went to the Bill Clinton School of Lying. I did not have sexual relations with that woman. I did not have sexual relations with my brother. Or Miriam, or whatever it was. Who knows? I don't know.
Speaking of bizarre, I told you when we were waiting to go on. I'll just leave it this kind of generic. I talked to somebody who is like a campaign promoter who tried telling me that JFK Jr. is still alive and he's out doing speaking engagements. And he has some type of obvious face covering to protect his identity. And the way that you know that it's him is that he's got these shoes on or something that he shows to everybody. Are you bringing me down? Is my mic a little too hot?
I think we're both a little bit too hot. We're running a little hot.
Well,
I'm going to bring you up a little bit here. You know, we're
I am hot.
I know you're hot. So am I. It's 94 freaking degrees outside. You know, it's hot.
No, I'm in a different hot anyway.
Okay.
Anyways. No, I had this dream this morning. Yeah, I'd bump it up a little bit more.
Yeah.
I had this dream this morning that JFK Jr. was alive and well, and that he had twin daughters, and that I was watching him on like Fox News, and he was doing, he wasn't coming out and saying that he was campaigning in 2024, but he was alluding to him running in 2024. And then I got to talk to him afterwards, and I said, you better not mess this up, and you got to run as a centrist. And I said, you know what, if your dad was around today, he would be considered a conservative.
Oh, without a doubt. He would be, and that's the same thing about Martin Luther King, he would be considered the ultimate conservative in today's standards. I mean, this guy, these people that consider themselves, you know, Democrats, we don't even recognize them today. I mean, I don't even think their own party recognizes them. I think they're more like delusional sociopath, socialist communists or something like that.
Well, one of the reasons that I asked Joe to join the show, and I want to set this up so that you as listeners kind of know and understand what you'll the change in the show. And by the way, to follow us on Facebook, it's Bella D'Angelo, D-A-N-G-E-L-O. There's also the Bella D'Angelo show page, also the Bella D'Angelo show.com website. So when I first met Joe, you authored a book, which I'll let you talk a little bit about because I was going to have you come on and talk about the book. Then I reached out to you again to see if you wanted to come on because you're also a trucker. And there is endless conversation that we can talk about trucking. But what really got me interested in asking you to join this adventure is your outlook and your optimism in where this country is going. I am not a dooms and gloomer. I'm not a prepper in the sense that I feel that we need to. I literally heard someone try and tell me that we're going to have to get to the point where we're living communally, helping each other with food, water, and supplies and things like that, living off the grid. I do not believe that. I believe that we're in store for some very challenging times with rolling blackouts and high gas prices and continuing high inflation, which is all what is going to lead us to what you and I believe there is optimism coming in November and also in 2024.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's the crap times that prepare you for the good times, and it's the good times to remind you that, you know, you have to enjoy it while you can. But this country has always been like a giant sine wave. We've had our great moments and we've had our terrible moments. And, you know, you can go as far back as the Civil War or, you know, we've had economic collapses. I think the one was in like 1878 where everybody was broke. You know, then you look at the Great Dust Bowl and the Depression, World War One, World War Two. I mean, who cannot say that one of our darkest hours was the day after Pearl Harbor? I mean, we were three aircraft carriers away from speaking Japanese and German. And people don't realize that if those aircraft carriers would have been at Pearl Harbor, this would be a whole different outcome. And so, no, what we are dealing with is a bump in the road. And it's exposing how incompetent and inept our government is right now, and people are taking damn notice, right down to the dog catcher, school councils, DAs, everybody. They're all looking at every one of them going, what in God's name are you thinking? And you know what? Come election day, we will correct it again.
Well, we're living in historic times. I've said this before, I'll say it again. When you juxtapose the most successful administration next to the most inept, here's the beauty of it, is that we had the most emotional driven election with the most fraudulent stolen election, and anybody out there who is smugly trying to pretend that this is what they signed up for, just like when Obama was in office, people weren't sane. But they knew that this is not what they were expecting to have happen to this country by the decision that they made pulling that lever. And so when you have created an environment where no matter who you are being affected by the election results, it creates this wave of a response. And the response is going to be much bigger than 16 and 2020, I fully believe. You look at the numbers right now. I mean, where is he polling?
Oh, God, he's got to be in the teens. And to be honest with you, I mean, you have what the mainstream media come out and say, yeah, his approval ratings are in the low 30s, maybe the high 20s. And the internal polling numbers have got to be below 20. I mean, because when you
if
have...
If they're even that.
Yeah. If you have 82% of the population believing that the economy is headed for an epic crash, well, that means 82% of the country is sitting there going, this president is a moron, you know, because everything he's doing, he's screwing up. It's simple to solve. Okay. You brought on and I'm a trucker.
Yeah. Right. Oh, and I want to jump in here 1 second because, so I've been riding around, and yesterday I had a conversation with a trucker cause I thought about you. And, speaking of being able to have everyday conversation with complete strangers, not starting out politically driven, but they end up there. Why? Because this economy and inflation is on everybody's mind. Everybody's. It's affecting them at the gas pump and at food. So I'm riding around with a gentleman that is doing delivery for a food company. And the cost, obviously, is, first of all, they believe that there's going to be a surge in food, home food delivery service. Why? Because people don't want to drive to the grocery store.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I'm sitting on the front steps with this woman, and her neighbor comes up. And he is checking in with her, and he mentions that his fridge went out over the weekend because he's an over-the-road truck driver. And he's lost all of his food, and he's really upset because of the high cost of food to replace the food. But then on top of it, Joe, he makes this comment that he doesn't understand that when gas prices go really high, because I didn't understand this, he said that the payment, the payout for like a delivery from, let's say, Minneapolis to Chicago, he said normally would be about $2,000. Does that sound right? And now they're paying out around $700. So I didn't understand why would the cost to the driver for that delivery reduce so much more, causing all of the drive. I mean, it's bad enough that they can't make a living. I asked him, I said, are you making a living right now? He said, no, I'm good. I don't have debt. He said, but I'm trying to hang on to the company because it's his, but he has to continue to let drivers go because they can't keep drivers when they would have been paying them $2,000, now it's down to $700. Why has it dropped so much?
Because all the expenses are going up. Everything's going up for a trucker. You know, I blew a turbo on my truck that 2 years ago would have cost $4,000. I ended up with everything with the departiculate filter, thank you, Obama, came to $13,900.
And it was $4,000 before?
Yeah. And now I was lucky to even find one. I found two in Memphis, and the trucking, the repair company says to me, and they said, well, we'll get it here to you next Wednesday. I said, the hell you will. You'll overnight that thing up here tomorrow. I'll pay the extra money because every day my truck is down, I'm losing between $800 and $1,000 a day. It doesn't pay for me to let it sit there for 5 days. I'll pay. And hey, guess what I've got to do? I got to pass that on to the customer. What do you think's going to happen? So people are like, well, gee, tomatoes, they used to only cost $1.49 a pound. Now they're $3 a pound. Why? Because it costs that much more to haul them from the tomato fields to the grocery store.
So why are the rates? So I sold transportation for Hoffman Trucking out of Jamestown, North Dakota about 3 years ago. And I remember them talking about the rates that were going so high to get these drivers. So why are the rates being paid to the drivers going down?
Because they can't keep up. You know, how do you go to your customers and say, some of them are locked in contracts and they're holding them to them contracts. They're saying, well, you build that contract out for $2,000 a run down to Chicago. That's what you're going to pay. That's what you're getting paid.
But they're reducing it down to $700.
No, that's what they're paying the driver out, $700. So, yeah, he's got it for $2,000, right? Now he used
to
be
able to keep up the expenses of the fuel and everything else. They've got to pay the driver less,
right? Yep. So let's say he had $2,000, and before out of that he paid the driver $1,400. $600 went to fuel expenses and stuff like that, or $500 went to fuel and expenses. He pocketed $100, and the other $1,400 went to the driver. Okay, that's called a brokered run. All right, that's usually what happens. He makes a hundo. You do that enough times. You got 10 drivers on the road every day, and he pocks $100 per driver. He's making $1,000 a day. That's not a bad living. But now let's say all your expenses are, you know, $1,400. What do you do?
So Biden's talking about a holiday on the federal tax on fuel. Waltz has been dancing around the story about pausing the state tax on gas. I'm going to make a prediction.
Hey, check it out. Look at who we got here. All right. Sicily, I'm bringing you on. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hey, listen, can I welcome to the show? Listen, I'd like to welcome Sicily Davis. She is the candidate that is running against Ilhan Omar for the CD5 so we can get rid of from the beast from the east and move this country back in the right direction.
Thank you for having me, Jill. Thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to join you.
All right. Well, hey, listen, this is something we're going to be doing every week, and you are the first guest on our new equipment, our new studio that me and Bella are running. I'm running the board. Bella, say hi to Sicily.
Thanks for coming on tonight. I've heard so much about you and the campaign, and let's start out the show with, can you give a little bit of background and platform to your campaign, and then we'll get into some questions and topics that you want to talk about, why you'll be so successful.
Yeah, so my background is I am someone who has walked away from the Democratic Party. I understand what it's like to exist in a political monolith. I started questioning during Bush Jr., voted for Obama on the first term, but recognized that I was not voting my values. Something just didn't sit right with me. I spent time volunteering and I was living in St. Cloud at the time, spending time with veterans, understanding they helped me to define and understand the true definition of American exceptionalism. At that point, I did not vote for Obama the second time because I fully embraced and accepted that I am hopelessly and wonderfully conservative Republican. I wanted to get involved. I wanted to support conservative candidates and make sure that I had a hand in extending the American experiment. And so once I became an empty nester, moved back to the Twin Cities and continued to become involved and became the chair for my Senate district, which was 59 in Minneapolis. It has since redistricted, but also became the state director for Blexit Minnesota, which is the nonprofit run by Candace Owens. And so, you know, on having that background, I actually understand what a political monolith looks like, sounds like, feels like, how the people think, what moves them. And so I understand that there is a certain amount of properties. There's a certain amount of mindset. And there is a way that you can approach people who have existed in a monolith to get them to change their vote, understanding that this district has been voting one way since 1963. Divisive language simply will not work. And so the people are ready for change. I am running on the issues that actually matter to the people of this district. That is, and these two fluctuate, but that is crime. It is kitchen table issues like gas prices, groceries, and you know, the value of the dollar. And it's education. Those are not partisan issues. The people are ready for change, but they just need someone who's willing to champion what collaborative leadership is and to dissolve the divide to actually unify this district. And that's why I'm stepping in the race to hold her to account.
Okay. You brought up kitchen table subjects, and one of them, you brought up fuel prices and stuff like that. Governor Walz is talking about, you know, this gas tax holiday, which I consider just kicking the can down the road. That doesn't solve the real problem because you're still going to need those gas taxes to repair our already rotten roads. What do you think about this gas tax holiday? I mean, if you could do it now, why weren't you doing it then? Why wasn't it permanent? I mean, I don't understand. How can all of a sudden we say, well, you know, we really don't need that money right now. We can, you know, we'll get it somewhere else. Well, where the hell are you going to get it?
But the problem is it's only a Band-Aid.
Yeah, yeah. So what is your opinion on this?
Agreed. I was just going to say this is a Band-Aid on a bullet wound, okay? Yep. So it's simply not going to work. What the people are suffering from, and not just Congressional District 5, but Americans in general, is massive leadership failure from the top leadership down. And so this is what the people are tired of. What I'm hearing from the people in the district, particularly for the base, conservative Republicans, is their frustration is obvious, right? They feel that they have been forced to accept policies that have rendered the dollar to lose its value, and they're suffering under policies that simply make businesses leave and families are struggling. But on the independent and liberal side, it's a little different. So they tend to steer clear from the obvious failure of the Biden administration and the minions like, you know, the other players and Ilhan Omar and AOC and whatnot. But what they actually are focused on are those issues. They also are focused on bringing the district together. So they don't want to really focus on that. They know that it's rhetoric. It's difficult for them to make a to draw, you know, connect the dots. And they just simply don't want to face it. I know it's there, but if they're willing to come together with me and deal with those three issues, I think that's a way that we can bring people together. But you're absolutely right. This is a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. The simple fact is that when Biden took office, we had a 1.2% inflation rate. That's it. I mean, we were doing very, very well. And the reversal of all those policies they were great for America. Businesses were confident. They wanted to be in business. We had oil. We had everything that we needed to be a sustainable and profitable, prosperous country. And all those decisions, all those policies were eradicated the second Biden got into office. And now, you know, liberals are going to have to face some of that rhetoric and accept that, you know what, you don't have Trump to blame. This is direct. This is direct. Blame goes directly to the Biden administration. But they have to decide that they can turn this around by putting the right people in office who really will represent them in D.C. If they do that in the polls this year, we can not only just experience a red wave, but we can repair. All is not lost, but the people have to just decide to be brave. And I believe now is the time. I do believe they're willing to do that.
I'm curious, are you able to engage in some good conversation with those on the left where they're actually expressing concern and frustration and open to actually changing party line for their vote?
I am. And again, this is really important that everyone that's listening hears that, because I get this so often. You have to go on attack. You have to attack her. You have to call her out on all her things. Well, here's the deal. This is a district that has voted liberal since 1963. These people see Ilhan Omar, so many of them, as their sweetheart, or this is the one they've chosen. This isn't about me shaking my finger. No one wants to hear that they made a bad choice or a wrong choice.
Right.
This is literally about, so I need people to understand that. I am absolutely offended by her language. I'm offended by her rhetoric. I am offended by her voting record. I am offended by the things that she's done. But attacking her doesn't win. We need to focus on unifying this district. And so when I speak to them, I only speak to the issues. I do not attack, because the truth is that my message is simply clear. Time's up, Ilhan. There's no need for any more attack. Listen, this district has been through enough. The optics of 2020 started literally in Minneapolis because of the failure and the optics of the third precinct going up in flames and those black and whites running away from the building in single file started unrest and mayhem all across the country. Congressional District 5 and its people are tired. They are tired of politicians who are only interested in becoming political activists and celebrities. They are tired of no count, tone deaf leadership. And they are tired of electing and putting people in office who are only interested in forging their own futures and not paying attention or listening to them. And so it's not about attack. I am absolutely able to engage because I simply am different. And I make it very clear. Listen, when I go to DC, I need you to know, I'm going to be honest with you, I am going to govern from the right. But that is no threat to you, because public safety, lowering the cost of living, and educational freedom does not hurt you or your political standpoint. It is not a threat to you. These are not partisan issues. I simply want to represent Congressional District 5. And the only way to get something different is that we're going to all have to pull together and literally do something different. We do that, we come together, and we make history.
You know, you brought up public safety. You know, we were all here for the George Floyd, you know, riots mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Today, the Supreme Court had a historic ruling saying that New Yorkers can carry guns. Do you think they had the decision right, or are they wrong?
Well, being in light of
what, you know, we've had happen here in Minneapolis with, you know, CD5 and, you know, the riots and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I think that when you talk about carrying guns, I always just go back to our Constitution. We have a binding contract called the Constitution. And I just say, what does the Constitution say? So carrying is not the issue. I think that where we can all come together is, can we sit down and have a conversation about how we control or who gets their hands on guns? Okay. I am by no means going to ever say you can't carry. Absolutely not, because it's, I think I refer back to our Constitution. But do we want to have a way to make sure that the right people are getting guns, or if there's a waiting period? I don't know. But what I do know is that we have to be open to having the conversation. At the end of the day, I refer, as a Christian, I refer to the Bible, right? And as an American, I refer to the Constitution. And as long as it doesn't erase what the Constitution says or the Constitution dictates, I'm open to conversation. I think that's where we need to be right now, especially in this district.
So the next topic that you talked about is the cost of living. So what would you mm-hmm. propose to be able to help with the cost of living and inflation, and to be able to, I mean, what does that mean when you say,
Yeah. So cost of living is just simply that. I believe that when you hear people say we need to increase the minimum wage, okay, but our inflation rate is at 8.6%. So maybe you had
Hold on. I'm going to interrupt you real quick on that. You say 8.6%. Okay. I did some recent crunching of some numbers here, and it was like fuel was at 33%, food was at 18%, home gas was at 27%. I kept going across all these numbers. I haven't seen anything that's below 15%. So how do they come up with 8.6%? My St. Louis Park math that I barely graduated in 1983 says that something ain't jiving here, folks.
Yeah, I think that what people truly understand, because I can watch Fox Business and get, I'm like, I have no idea what they're talking about, CPI and this and that and the other. Here's what people understand. They understand when a bill used to be $60, it's now $210.
Right? Exactly.
They understand what money leaves their wallet. They understand what that means. They know, they understand an increase in wages versus not having a job. They understand when their gas bill used to be $40 or $80 and now it's $300, right? They understand when they can't no longer, you know, when the gas prices are up, or when they have to actually decide to carpool as husband and wife and go to work because they can't afford to drive both vehicles. That's what people understand. This is simple. And I thank you, Joe, for bringing that up, because this is, we're getting down to basics. That's what people understand. And right now, people and businesses are being driven out because of the decisions that are made from top down. And so that purposeful decision making to literally break our financial system, to break businesses, drive them out, and to stress American families, is why people are hurting, why businesses are hurting, and why it's now more than ever time for new leadership. We need people who actually understand how our dollar works. We need to refer to the professionals. We actually need to draw from the people who know what they're doing. With oil, we have the ability. We have the ability today to be independent, to be self-sufficient. And we can be drilling again, we could be exporting again, we can be doing all these things to lower the stress financially on the American families and in businesses. We're simply not doing it because there is a progressive agenda that is put in place right now to break the unfounding of America and create a new world order. It's based in Marxism and socialism. And as Americans, we simply cannot allow this to happen. We have to stand up. And the only way to do that is you go into the poll, you go into that booth and you vote differently and you get these people out.
So the very thing, the green energy deal that they believe that they are turning this country into is completely imploding on them. Much like I've always said that COVID, you know, they thought that COVID was the ultimate control mechanism that was going to control the masses. Here, the Green New Energy Deal, which they believe is going to turn us into this greener society, is imploding because the Democrat Party, as we talked about, is completely unrecognizable. So the working class party, as we all know, doesn't exist anymore. And yet a conservative like yourself, you're coming in talking about the working class and the very backbone of what keeps this country alive. Us that are out trying to make a living, support our families, go on vacations, do the basics, are being crippled by the very party that doesn't recognize what the public themselves, that they're trying to get reelected. They are unrecognizable and they are not going to win because they don't have a platform and they don't have a language to connect to the very people that they are crippling. So you're coming into the audience that cannot recognize necessarily what Ilhan Omar is going to try and sugarcoat to them and hand them, but they are living the failures, just trying to get the hell out the front door to get to the grocery store or to get to their job. They can't afford to do it anymore.
That's correct. Yep. And so this is what they have to face. And it's really difficult. And I love it that you said that they don't recognize their own party anymore, because the Democrat Party, as I believe, is absolutely split, right? There is a far, far left progressive socialist agenda that's going on. And then you have the Joe Manchin, right? The ones that are represented by the JFK Democrats. And so I think that where we are, Minnesota, a lot of people don't know, Minnesota has a very long independent voting streak. These are the people that I'm engaged with every day. These are the people that you just referred to. Families with kids who want their kids to have an education that's rooted in quality, where the bureaucracy of the Department of Education doesn't try to step in to become the parent, where there isn't curricular transparency, trying to force critical race theory down our children's throats and speak to them about their genders, right? They want leaders who understand crime, right? And how we can actually increase the Minneapolis police to get our numbers back up, just so that businesses are able to do business and make a profit. And so the very party, the very people that they say they want to represent or stand for are the ones that they're alienating. This is what they're recognizing. And I'm telling you, if I am someone who can be that soft place to land, not use sharp language, shaking my finger in the face and say, ha, 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 you get what you deserve, right? But say, hey, you didn't get what you voted for. Now is the time for us to come together. Let's vote something different so we can actually let everyone know, hey, businesses, Minneapolis is open for business. Education will be rooted in quality. We can get crime rates down. Moms can load kids into cars without worrying about being carjacked. If you go into the store and come back out, your catalytic converter will still be there, right? These are basic expectations that everybody wants.
So when we talk about crime, so here's an observation that I've had just in the last couple of days. I've been riding around with a gentleman in North Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. How many gas stations have I walked into? And you wonder if you're walking into a bank. The security and the police presence. I finally asked one of the gentlemen, we were in North Minneapolis, and I said, is this something new? And he said, well, we had to start it a couple of months ago. And I said, it's from the drive-offs. And he said, well, not only that, they're just plainly pulling food from the shelves and walking right out. So how are you going to make that district safer?
Lawlessness, smash and grab. Crime is not illegal anymore. This is a shame. So we got to get back to that. So first we do is we got to get our police force back up, right? So when you're down 400 police officers, let's do the math on that really quickly. Generally, they work about 10, 11 to 12 hour shifts, but let's give them the minimum. 400 police officers at 8 hours a day, 32,000 hours. Think about that. How much crime can be committed in that many hours? How many people can be attacked? How many thefts can happen? How much violent crime can happen in that amount of hours? So we have to get our police force back up. We need police presence.
Okay.
This is what we, yep, go ahead. Go ahead.
I understand that, but where are we going to get these people?
I was just going to ask that.
Yeah, well, I mean,
disenfranchise them to the point where, first of all, they're told to stand down, and then there's no respect for them, and then we've literally taken them out at the kneecaps for what they can and can't do. So how do we turn that around?
How do we turn them back into heroes?
Yeah, that's exactly. So that's the leadership. That's where leadership has failed. So what police officers need to know, it's just like oil companies. What the police officers need to understand and know and fully be able to rely on is that leadership will back them up. We'll put them back in a place where they can actually do their job. There is no confidence in police officers to actually do their job. They literally have to pull back and hesitate to protect the public. We can't have that. So even if we have the numbers, and you both of you are absolutely right, even if we have the numbers, if they're shy and they're reluctant, we still aren't safe. So I think base bottom line, you're both so right. We start at the basement. We have to instill confidence in our police force that they have leadership that will now back them up and allow them, put them back in a position where they will be allowed to actually do their job, which is to keep the public safe. Once we do that, there will be willingness and confidence to rejoin the MPD. And this isn't just Minneapolis. As you know, it's all across America. There is reluctance in police officers. They weigh it out and they say, you know what? At the end of the day, I just want to go home. Not worth it. Protecting the public now could put me on trial to lose my very own freedom for actually doing my job. This is a crisis that we're in right now.
Absolutely. Hey, you know, the immigrant community, which, you know, ours is a large Somali community and stuff like that. And these are the people that are most afraid of the police, but they're also the ones that are most victimized by the crime. Are you out there reaching out to the imams and talking to the community elders? What do they got to say about what's going on?
Yeah, so the imams, it's interesting you brought that up. So the Somali community, 7% of Congressional District 5, is not as big as people think. However, they are facing unprecedented crime in their communities. And so imams are saying, listen, we are conservative. We believe in strong education. We want to be business owners and we want to be homeowners right now with the next generation. And this is where most of the problems lie, is that they feel like they're also losing their culture. So those, that generation that's actually born here are not really observing the Somali culture, right? They're becoming quote unquote Americanized. So, for example, is it hijab where they wear
hijab,
the covering?
Yep.
So the,
hijab,
yeah. Yep. So the women, for example, they will wear the hijab, but then they wear American clothes, or they'll wear the covering and not have their head covered, right? Things like that, that they're in the, and the, so what they're recognizing is that, we're conservative. It's time to actually leave the Democratic Party. This is what's been so exciting, and actually embrace our conservative values. And so what's great about that is it's imams. It's not just leaders. It's literally the top, because the Somali community actually votes in sects. So they actually guide the people and instruct them how to vote. So getting to them is really, really important. They have embraced the Minnesota GOP. There have been some couple of roundtables with them. And I'm telling you, come November, Congressional District 5 is going to look very different. And so we've made headway that way. It's so exciting to participate in that.
Wow, that's pretty exciting news. You know, I understand a Somali community probably a lot better than most people, and I do understand their conservatism. And the problem with what they're facing is what happens with every immigrant community that comes over here. You know, the first wave is always very traditionalized in their beliefs and stuff like that. And then as it,
right.
it slowly erodes, and that's just the nature of America. You become American, you know, and
that's right.
You know, the Hmong
freedom gets in you. Freedom gets in you, and it infects you and affects you.
Oh, absolutely. I deal with a lot of Hmong, and it's really funny that, you know, I know what their traditional names are, and all their children's names are Bob, Kevin, and Jim, you know. And
it's, absolutely.
And the Hmong are really wanted to Americanize faster than anybody. I mean, mm-hmm. I love working with the Hmong more, just – this great community that, you know, is partially misunderstood. And once you get to know them, they're a riot. I've even learned to speak a little bit of Hmong. And I'm excited as hell that May Lore is running against Betty McCollum over in CD4. And she's Hmong. And, you know, look at where my optimism is that the Republican Party is no longer the face of old, white, rich fuddy-duddies. We have you. We've got May Lore. We've got people of color. Myra Lopez won that district down
in Texas.
Yeah.
Yes.
She flipped a district that 150 years was Democrat. I mean, come on. Herschel Walker is going to win Georgia. I get 10 to 15 envelopes a week from candidates across the country, and seven of them are of people of ethnic origins running as GOP. If I was a Democrat, I would be going, oh, crap, what the hell is happening out there?
Well, I want to put this out there. You know, when Donald J. Trump announced that he was running in 16 and then he won, he changed the playing field in politics. He awakened the silent majority like nobody has ever done. And then he leveled the playing field because so many people can come out now like you and talk to us like we talk to each other. You're talking to us about the core values and platforms and things that affect us on a day-to-day basis. It's no longer the typical rhetoric of the politician. We now have the everyday American standing up and fighting for us and being heard and listened to instead of being sidelined and saying, who's going to take you seriously? You're not a politician. You're not polished. Right. You can come out and you can talk to us and we're going to listen because we miss that. We want that. And we value that because we now realize that that's what's going to lead us.
All right, Cicely, you got 2 minutes and 30 seconds to tell me and Bella and the country what you're going to do to unite this district under your beautiful banner, and you're going to lead us to the promised land.
Well, you know, change has to start somewhere. And again, this district has been voting in a blue monolith since 1963. What I am is exactly what Bella just talked about. I represent change. I represent innovation and something anew. My goal is to simply unify the city and the district. I'm going to give independents a permission structure to vote outside of their respective monoliths. I see people of this district as individuals who have a right to think for themselves. I continue to reach out to them and reason with them to show compassion, while I also provide a way off the current self-defeating path that they're being led down. This is about winning. It's about winning hearts and minds. It's about connecting over kitchen table issues, are the issues that actually matter to CD5 people specifically. And that's what we do not have right now. We have tone deaf, no count, dismissive leadership in Ilhan Omar, and that has to change. The city needs leadership that is invested in its residents as individuals who have their own dreams for themselves and their children. And I believe at the end of the day, come next November, I will have the support of those who wish to, who have something better. It's just simple as this. It's okay if you voted one way for a while. It's actually okay to love America and still want nice things right? And still want an education for your child to leave a legacy and to want your dollar to be valued. We can all come together on those things. And so I'm telling you, if you're hearing anything about what I just said, then I am your candidate. If you're ready for change, if you're ready to make history, if you really want to put Minneapolis back on the map with a new narrative, not the 2020 narrative, with a new narrative, then you're going to go to the, you're going to vote as the base on Tuesday, August 9th to vote for Cicely Davis. And then come general election, you're going to vote Ilhan Omar out. And I will have the pleasure and the honor to say, I am Cicely Davis, Congresswoman representing the people of Congressional District 5, Minnesota.
Not to put you on the spot, I got to ask this, though, because there's a lot of people that are going to say, okay, voter integrity, first of all, in that district specifically. And second of all, do you know how you're polling? And are you neck and neck, a little behind, a little, I mean, where are you at in this campaign against her?
So we have polling coming out. I'm waiting for the results. The only thing we have in reference right now is what came out from Ilhan. She ran a very, you know, a slighted poll, give or take. So here's what the results were for people who don't know. It said that for the primary, keep that in mind now, for the DFL primary, 60% will vote for Ilhan. 21% will vote for Don Samuels. 1% will vote for Tran. But here's the interesting part, folks, and this is what I'm telling you. 17 to 18% of people are undecided. The reason why that's important is that typically that primary election, usually that polls, she would pull strongly, 80 plus percent. Independents are undecided. There are a whole group of people that are undecided in this district. And so I'm telling you.
And that's her
November,
poll. That's her poll. That's her own poll. Which her approval could be about as reliable as Biden's polling numbers.
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct. So I'm telling you that what I'm talking to you about is real. I'm having the conversations and I'm telling you people are ready for change.
Well, we are certainly ready for change. So listen, Cicely, it was a wonderful time to have you on. We want to have you again as soon as possible.
Can you tell people, or do you have any upcoming events where people can come out and meet and greet, shake your hand? Where can they go to find you and your campaign and get behind you and support you?
Thank you. Yeah. So if you go to CicelyDavis.com, that's CicelyDavis.com, support me. We can get a yard sign. You can volunteer, do lit drops, door knock. I'm
put you on the radio.
Put me on the radio, that whole deal. And then there's a Jamboree parade coming up and on Friday. So look that up. I will be there. Love to meet you in person. Let's have a conversation. Let's, you know, shake hands and talk about the issues.
Love it. I'd like to meet you in person. So the Jamboree is this Friday. Where is it at?
The Jamboree is this Friday. It's in Columbia Heights. And let's see here. Yeah, Columbia Heights on Central Avenue. Yeah.
What time?
That is at 6 p.m.
You know what? I might just have to make it, you know, I mean, I'm like right there, and I need some bread from the Holy Land, so I might as well do a drive-by, you know. Well, listen, Cicely, we're running out of time. I will hope to see you Friday night, and then I definitely hope to see you on Inauguration Day, January 20th, 2023, in Washington, D.C.
There you go. Thank you both for having me. It's been an honor. It's been an hour. I'll be listening.
Thank you. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, wasn't that exciting?
And we actually accomplished it with the new equipment.
Great googly moogly. Well, you know, like I said, the technological kid here trying to run this board and, you know, my crash course, and it was like, you know.
Well, you talk about, you know, I have a dream, Martin Luther. I mean, this was the one thing that I thought I was going to be doing all the time. And Joe, I just want to thank you because, as I told you when we had dinner the other night, which, you know, I want to turn this thing around. And the first thing was to finish, you know, fix the technology, because we've got great people that we want to get their voices out. And Cicely, you know, I've seen her on Facebook. I didn't know a whole lot about her, but I got to say, she's amazing. And I think I think we're really going to see Minnesota. As I was riding around earlier today and talking about, you know, the culturalism, the Somali, we have more Somalians in Minnesota than any other state of the U.S.
That is true.
Absolutely driven because of the welfare, the highest welfare payout that we have. And
that's
it was
true again.
Yes. And it was purposefully set up between a plan between the federal and state government. Now, the interesting thing was it was put in place to really change the landscape, right? Turn the state actually more blue than it already was. Now, the interesting thing about Minnesota, as Jensen brought up in the interview that we're going to reschedule, Minnesota is actually turning more red.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, well, once you get away from South Minneapolis and Duluth, you're it's like the whole damn state is red. That's your bluest areas. You know, yeah, you have outlying pockets here and there and stuff like that. Angie Craig is holding on, and Dean Phillips, you know. But I mean, I don't know who's running out there. I sure would like to get them, whoever's running against them. But I got to believe, just like Colin Peterson up in Detroit Lakes, they got to be sweating. You know, Colin lost, and he was the only guy who didn't vote against impeaching Trump.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, when you look at the two parties, right? And I've had this conversation. If it weren't for Trump, we would be battling the typical establishment rhino Republicans. They for the most part are pretty much worthless. The Democrats themselves are being pulled so far left because of the progressive, what do we call them? The five, the
squad,
squad,
yeah, the whatever.
Whatever. Yeah. But the thing is they haven't had their Trump moment. They haven't had someone come into that party to shake it up, reinvigorate it, and turn it around like what Trump did. So they continue to fall further and further and further and further further left, as we talked about earlier, so they are unrecognizable. And yet the policies that they believe are going to be able to continue to turn this country into the new world order and all this other stuff that we've been, you know, threatened for so long, it's actually turning on themselves, and it's creating this wave of the working class that is saying, we don't know you and understand you, and they're walking away. Even common sense Democrats are walking away from their own party. So I thought that in 2020 that the Democrat Party was really imploding, but the implosion is really happening in 2021, 2022, because of the radical impotence, complete epic failure of this administration.
You know, and the real energy can be found at the Republican convention down in Rochester, where 60% of the delegates down there were brand new. I know, because I was one of them. And think about that. The entire house was full. They'd never had that before. And then at the CD5 nomination for Cicely Davis,
yeah,
they had a full house there. And like 40% of the delegates there were brand new. Now, what is that telling you? That's telling you that people are mad as hell, and they're not going to take it anymore. They're standing up. They're getting involved. They recalled the school council and in San Francisco because they thought they were way too far left, and now they're recalling district attorneys because they've had enough of crime. People are mad as hell. But the scary thing is, if they get really mad, and I mean really mad.
Why is that scary?
Because the last time this country got really mad, a lot of good men died. Think about that. We are at that point where if you have one side that goes so far in one direction and keeps poking the bear, sooner or later, the bear is going to poke back. And that is what I am very optimistic. I'm a positive guy. I never want to see that. I hate war. All right. But right now, this is, in a way, a war for the hearts and minds of our people, our country, our nation. If we don't stand up now, when? I was at the fall of the Berlin Wall. I was there. I saw the refugees. I was in East Germany. I saw it all. We can't stop now. This is our time. This is now our time to fight back.
As I always say, we got to fight, baby, fight. And I've been doing this since 2010. And back in 2010, during the years of Obama, Joe, and the rest of you listening, it was really hard to get people to understand and get energized, get pissed off, want to get involved. But for the love of God, all you have to do is talk to somebody, like stand in a yard trying to sell some product, and right away the neighbor is complaining about the cost of fuel for his trucking job. You know, the gentleman I rode around with today, he's not taking the vacation that he wants to take because of the cost of fuel. I mean, all the things, we're all making decisions that we never thought about, talked about, even considered. And it's because of the everyday cost, the everyday American dream and spirit that's being taken away from us by this epic failure. We can wrap it up at this point. This was a great show tonight.
Well, I would like to talk about one thing. I got a couple minutes.
Okay.
By the way, on Facebook, you can follow me at Joe Mannsheim, and you spell Mannsheim. And I also am under my pen name, J.P. Moonshine. Mannsheim, Moonshine, come on.
Man bun.
Man bun. You know. So anyway, I wrote a book, and it's called The Healer, The Riddle of Creation. And it's where ancient aliens meets modern culture, and it's a rock and roll ride through the history of the world. And it takes on a different view of what's going on. Basically, it's a guy returns from Iraq, and there's an ancient alien that's watching him, and she wants to save our planet, and she needs to figure out how. So she abducts this guy, and the rest is history. Check it out. You can find it on Google, or you can Google it in what is that? Amazon. Yeah, Amazon or Ex Libris. You know, it's called The Healer, The Riddle of Creation. What I plan to be doing is it's a two-part book. The sequel is coming out. I'm sending them both to a new editor. Gonna re-release them. But if you get original copy, think if you had an original copy of Tolkien's The Hobbit before he changed it on his third edition. I'll bet you one of those is worth a few bucks.
Absolutely.
You know. Well, anyway, hey, listen. What a show. Did you have fun?
Yes.
I had fun.
We didn't crash and burn.
Yep, we're still standing.
I'm not screaming at you to try and click a link again to turn. Anyways, you know, everything happens for a reason. And Joe, thank you for coming to the cause, because I do believe this is the unique voice in conservative talk radio with a lot of common sense and humor. And my message is always, we got to fight, baby, fight, because when you have hope in your hand, you got to pass it around. And there's a lot of reason to be hopeful, but there's also an awful lot of reason why we are going to fight and why we are going to win. Because, as I've always said, it has to get dark before the light comes out.
Hey, and if you ain't willing to stand up and be counted, then you got no reason right to complain. So, God bless America. Thank you, Bella, for having me. And we are out.
Ciao for now.